Hi, I'm Leah Canland with my husband Steve, and you're listening to our Insightful Adventures, a show that chronicles our travels around Australia and the savvy, scientific, and scenic things we experience along the way.
So in our last episode, we wrapped up South Australia and we headed into Victoria. Today's podcast, however, we're going to talk about our first few days in Tasmania. We left the port of Melbourne in a ferry and landed in Devonport. And so we will come back and release an episode about Melbourne and Victoria. But for now, we're going to talk about Tasmania. So we landed in Devonport, traveled to Devonport, Launceston, and made it over to Bay of Fires. We traveled 698 kilometers or 419 miles, and we did that in 3 days.
It was a cool town, but the coolest thing we did in Devonport was that evening. There is a beach called Lilaco Beach Conservation Area, and they have a colony of fairy penguins. And pretty much all along several of the coasts of Tasmania, there's fairy penguin colonies, but it was cool because it wasn't too crowded, and we were able to see some fairy penguins come up on shore and a few little chicks waiting to be fed, and so that was pretty neat.
It was pretty neat. And they had a couple of volunteers there, so you could ask questions, any questions you want about fairy penguins. And Tasmania does not have an established fox infestation. And so the fairy penguin population here on Tasmania is actually pretty healthy.
Yeah, absolutely. So after Devonport, we went over to Launceston. And Launceston is the second largest city in Tasmania, even though you've probably never heard of it.
No.
And what's cool about Launceston is that not only is it an old town, but there is a gorge pretty close to the center of town. It's called Cataract Gorge, and it's really awesome. There's walking trails and a suspension bridge, and you could actually swim in the gorge.
There was a chairlift that took you up around the gorge, and picnic area and playground and grills. Awesome place just to do some bushwalks and just picnics and hang out.
Yeah, it was gorgeous, and it was fun to just sort of stretch our legs before we made it all the way to the northeast coast of Tasmania, which is where Bay of Fires is.
And Bay of Fires is so pretty. So we spent a couple days there. We went to... So it's kind of the whole Bay of Fires is actually kind of this whole huge coastline. And one of the things we did was to this little hole. They call it the Mermaid Hole? Mermaid Pool?
Yeah, Mermaid Pool. So it's kind of on Sloop Reef. And on Sloop Reef, you can sort of... The whole Bay of Fires is just these secluded beaches and turquoise blue water and big granite boulders that are covered in this, orange-red lichen. And you just sort of, scramble across boulders and come across all sorts of little bays and natural pools. And so there's a natural pool that Steve was talking about called Mermaid's Pool.
Yeah, which... it was pretty deep. I don't know how deep it was. We were able to jump in it, so it was deep enough. You couldn't even see the bottom at some parts. But I guess it just fills up during high tide, and low tide goes out, and you can kind of jump into this little mermaid pool.
Yeah, so the water's really cold.
So cold. Any off the coast, anywhere here, the water is just super cold.
Yeah, but it was still fun to do and worthwhile. And the other thing that we did in Bay of Fires that we are so excited to spend the rest of our podcast talking about is an adventure that we had up on the north side of Bay of Fires. We're not sure what the beach is, but it's just sort of where the road ends.
Yeah, kind of north of the gardens.
Mm-hmm, yeah, around the gardens of Bay of Fires.
Yeah, anyways, the northern end of Bay of Fires. And we were there just kind of hanging out. I jumped in the water, even though it was cold, but... just kind of hanging out, and then we noticed this little fairy penguin.
Well, it wasn't us that noticed it. We were hanging out with a family that we had met, talking with them. It was a husband and wife and two teenage boys. And the wife had initially noticed a fairy penguin that had washed up shore. And in our conversations, she knew that I had just gotten my degree in marine biology. And so she assumed that I knew what to do. It's like, oh boy, I studied fish. I did not study marine birds. But yeah, she brought it to our attention. And then immediately from there, Steve and I sort of took over.
And what made it kind of unusual is we feel like we've done several fairy penguin things. Fairy penguins go out to the ocean and they feed all day and they don't come in until after dark. And so this was the middle of the day. So the fact that he had come on shore in the middle of the day, it was already a warning sign. And after observing the little guy for a minute, it was pretty apparent that he couldn't move.
Yeah, he couldn't bear any weight on one of his legs. He couldn't stand up.
Yeah, he would try to stand up and he would try to move and he couldn't do it, and then he just flopped down on his little belly. And so Lee and I were like, oh, and the family, we were like, oh, okay, what do we need to do? And so Lee and I just sprung into action, and we had to, like, run around to get, like, service on our phones. So Leah is on one part of the bay, and I'm on the other part of the beach, and we're both trying to, like, call phone, like, numbers, trying to figure out what to do. And we finally got a hold of somebody, and it was the
Bonorong Wildlife Sanctuary.
Yeah, and they connected me to Charlene. And Charlene runs a wildlife refuge.
Yeah. Yeah, the Andara Wildlife Sanctuary. And Charlene there, she is a full-time volunteer. It's a private sanctuary that sort of services the northeast coast of Tasmania. And 24/7, she's there to rescue, rehabilitate, raise, and release any orphaned, injured, or sick native animals, birds, and even sometimes reptiles.
Yeah, so I contacted her, and we had to drive to her, which was an hour away, which was totally fine. So we ended up getting a blanket and a towel, and we went down to the beach, picked up the little fairy penguin, mm-hmm. put him in a box, covered him up, so he was kind of in a dark area. And at the end of the podcast, we'll kind of give a few hints if you do come across any animals that are injured, what to do. And this is what they told us to do. We drove the hour to her house and dropped him off. And then we're about to play an interview that we did with them, because we were just so fascinated of what she does and the animal she takes care of.
She was so kind. Steve and I were very inquisitive when we realized that she had just heaps of kangaroos and wallabies,
wombats.
Yeah, that was the magic word that Steve and I were like, I'm sure she saw our face light up. And so she welcomed us into her home, which is also the sanctuary, showed us around, introduced us to several of the animals, let us go around during her nighttime feeding and sort of feed some of the tawny frogmouths and the kookaburras, and was just, you'll hear it in the interview we're about to play, but had a really positive impact on Steve and I, and we got to fall in love with the wombats.
Anyway, so we're going to play an episode, our interview with them, and just some backup information. She takes in animals with the ultimate goal to release them. She does have some permanent animals that she has that aren't suitable for release. Like, she had some birds that have lost eyesight or wings, and some kangaroos or wallabies that had broken legs and injured hips that are okay to get around her property but wouldn't survive in the wild. So she takes animals in with the goal to release them back in the wild. In the rare case that she can't release them, she gives them a safe home and food and a nice place to live out their lives.
Mm-hmm. So here's the interview.
Hi, we are here in Tasmania, and we are going to talk to a couple locals about what they do. And so can you guys introduce yourselves?
Okay, I'm Charlene, and we're at Andara Wildlife Sanctuary in Tasmania. I've been caring for wildlife for 19, 20 years. I'm feeding a little wombat Joey at the moment.
My name's Bruce. I'm Charlene's partner, and I'm a commercial fisherman by trade.
Just tell us how you got started in taking care of orphaned or injured animals.
Okay, starting when I came to Tasmania, there was a need for it, and I could see that people were caring, and it wasn't as hard to get into as I thought it would be. The first time we came home and found a little Joey possum, brush-tailed possum, the mum had been killed by a car, so I took it on, and it was quite hard to get information at the time. It was just talking to people, local people. The vet nurse at the time was really good, and just learning from experience, really, and getting her through, finding out what formulas and different things that I could use. And after that, it just went from one to two to three to up to how many, Bruce? Maybe I've had sort of 20 in care at one time of Joey's
at birth. Least
with a running number of about 50 in total that we have at one time of permanents and orphans, injured, sick, birds, all species, from wombats, wallabies, kangaroos, quolls. What else have I had?
Hawks.
Eagle, wedge-tail eagle.
Wedge-tail eagles come in.
Echidnas, so pretty much everything except Tasmanian devils and bettongs I haven't. But bandicoots, is another one.
Wow, that's quite a spread of animals. I imagine that it's difficult, but also really rewarding. Is there any stories or why is it that you continue? Is it a rewarding factor? Is it your love for animals? What keeps you going when I'm sure there's just so much to do every day with these animals?
All of that, it's the love for animals, that's the key. But also, because now I can do so much, and if something comes, I know I can help it, so I do. And it's my passion, I guess. It's what I do now, and it is full-time. It's a lot of work. It's 24/7, from when I get up in the morning to early hours in the morning and the next day I get to bed.
If I can probably put a slightly different light on it as well. Like when we first met some years ago, we were driving along the road and there was a wallaby that had been hit and killed on the side of the road. And as we were driving past, Charlene broke into tears. Here in Tasmania, there is a lot of roadkill, so you can get a little bit desensitized to it. And I don't know, we started talking about it, and Charlene explained that to her, seeing an animal injured is the same as seeing a person injured, or, it had the same effect on her as if there was a person that had been hit on the road and just left there. And I think that's kind of too. A bit of a deeper reason that for Charlene the animals are on equal footing with all of us, and so wherever possible it's a responsibility that she can't deny. If something needs help, it's got to be helped, and I think that's sort of one of the underlying things to it. Sort of another story behind why Charlene does what she does is as an educational thing, because a lot of people will bring an animal in and then get to see like the things you guys have seen yesterday, and then as an educational thing it's great, as in from Charlene's angle of educational of let's look after these guys, on a broader perspective, as you said before, Steve, about looking after the planet more. And just to diversify on that one a bit, as a professional fisherman, I see the direct effects of how we treat the planet, in that if we overfish areas, you can see the ongoing effects from that for years. And they're not just environmental effects, they're economic effects too. So economically, we're actually all way better off if we be nice to the place.
Exactly. Keep everything in balance in the first place.
Yeah. And I see that, you know, firsthand on the ground, as it were, or on the water. So that's diversified a bit from the story, but
it's heartwarming to know that there's people out there that look at their animals, at their environment, in such a high regard. And it's so wonderful to meet people that look at everything around them at such high regard. That is,
thank you.
It's really quite cool, because often you don't always meet people that, you know, and sometimes, you know, we in our culture and environment, we see things and we maybe devalue it, you know, a little bit. But it's nice to know that there's people out there that, if I can help something, I do it. I think that's really quite cool.
Thank you.
Is there any stories of any, like, good stories that you found an animal that really came a long way, or any favorite animals you've had throughout the years?
Yeah, there's so many. My first echidna was 400 grams, and I got it right through to release. So that was, yeah, an amazing, totally different again, feeding, the way that you have to handle them. So it was a very good experience to finally get, you know, an echidna right through, because usually they come in injured and, you know, and they'll die from injuries. So wedge-tail eagle was, I've had four rescues now, five. The last one was quite amazing. I only had it for a few days in captivity because it was actually okay. The people thought that the wing was injured, but it wasn't. So I took it back to where they'd found it, which was about an hour drive from here. And as I'm driving along, you know, looking out for a place that would be suitable for releasing it, another wedge-tail eagle flew past, and I was like, oh, this has to be the spot. So I pulled over, and then another wedge-tail eagle came, and I'm thinking, this has to be it, it's the right area, maybe this is family. So at the time I was nursing a badly sprained ankle, and I had to climb over fences with this wedge-tail eagle, you know, covered up under my arm, set up all the cameras so I could film it. And then, yeah, when I released, it was it flew really well to this tree. The other wedge-tail eagle came across, and then there was this whole play of just, yeah, this one acting injured because the other one had come to check it out, and it was just getting back to... So it was quite amazing just to see how they acted with each other. I'd never seen that before. I don't know if many people have, but... so that was just last year.
Yeah, it's sort of animal behaviour that you would never normally see. But I guess that's another thing too with working with animals like this, that you see a lot of behaviour that just normally wouldn't be noticed unless someone studied them every day, which Charlene does.
Yeah, which I do, yeah. So I do learn from having captive animals now over the years with different ones that I've held on to because of injuries. I mean, they're all, you know, fine to be in here, but not for release. Just watching what the mums do with the joeys and what times, you know, ages and stuff that they do certain things. So I'm learning from watching them in captivity, which has helped me then to pass on to the joeys in care. So, yeah, I love that part of it.
And seeing how they stay in their family groups.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Particularly the paddy melon, the smaller wallaby.
Yeah.
They all... stay, there might be, what, three generations?
Three,
sitting out together. And so,
really?
Yeah, so they keep their family, those family ties right through life, don't they?
Sure, yeah. One of the Paddies, she had four joeys that were still all huddled up, like they'd be out there together. And then those joeys would have joeys in their pouch. So it was this whole little family group with
the
new
grandma,
joys. The grandma and the, yeah, exactly.
And yelling,
yeah, and just they snuggle in, and yeah, they're very family oriented in that way. that I've found.
What is the typical, is there like a common injury that you see that most animals come in here?
Sure, it'd be broken legs, mainly from, yeah, car injuries, truck injuries. Sickness would be from toxoplasmosis, which is from cats, which is a very nasty disease that there is no cure for.
They're not a native animal in Australia. Domestic cats, so the wildlife here don't have any resistance at all to any of the cat-borne diseases because they're such a new introduced species, and there's a lot of wild feral cats. So apart from the damage they do in actually catching and killing a lot of our smaller animals, the toxoplasmosis, or even as a cat bite, the cat bite has bacteria and the animals have no resistance. So most animals that come in here, the smaller ones, like a bandicoot perhaps, that has a cat bite, almost certain to die, even if it's not a very damaging bite, just by the introduction of the bacteria.
And even if they're treated with antibiotics straight away, they still haven't made it.
Oh no. Is there any anything that you would tell cat owners or recommend to them, you know, since you're on the side of things with the rescue and rehabilitation from, you know, injuries because of cats? Is there anything that you would recommend cat owners to be aware of?
Sure, just to keep them, be responsible, I guess, keep them enclosed if they can. You know, house cats have an enclosure outside, so they still get their time outside, but not to damage the wildlife. Birds, you know, again, is a big thing that cats will go for as well. We have a cat, so she is inside, and then when she's outside, she has her enclosure, and she'll never harm anything. So we're responsible with our own cat.
And it's actually a lot of fun setting up like a nice big enclosure for a cat, because you put, you know, runways and tunnels and make a proper little jungle gym for them. And it's a lot of fun to set it up, and they love it. They've got their own zone. And
They can look but not touch.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What does a typical day look like for you?
Okay. Typical day starts...
The night before.
As soon as I wake up and get up, it's pretty much straight into feeding, unless Bruce is like, hang on, you've got to have breakfast. At the moment, so I'm bottle feeding 5 Joeys, 3 Eastern Grey kangaroos and 2 wombats. So I just start with feeding, which takes roughly half an hour each animal, to just prepare milk, bottle, feed, give them some time. Once that round of feeding is over, it's clean up, it's washing, it's spending time outside with each one to give them outside time, sun. It's raking the grounds of where we're on an acre, so that has to be raked pretty much daily, or, you know, not the whole acre daily, but over the week. Water bowls, cleaning enclosures, getting leaves. We go up into the bush and get saplings to bring back to feed. We need hay, pellets. So it's just a constant. If I'm always doing something, once the feeding's done, it's keeping on top of everything else, and then back to feeding again. So at the moment, these guys are feeding 4 times a day. So when you can spread that out through the day, that's why I'm not getting to bed in the same day. And it follows through to the next morning.
Wow, that is a lot. But what you do here, I think, is fantastic and very admirable. I think we'll kind of start to close. But is there any thing that you would like people in the broader sense to know about, or any information you want to point people towards about animals or environment, or any information that you would like I don't know, anyone to know about?
Yeah, I guess it's just having respect for everything, really, and looking after, you know, if you see something injured or sick or that needs help, then to do something about it. Like, even if you have to call someone else, like, there is always a way that you can help, like you guys did with the fairy penguin, you know. It's, and to bring it all this way, it was an hour drive for you, it stopped you from, but you know, you've done the right thing, and people can do things. There's, you know, so much information on the internet now, there's no excuse really for people to not do something or know how to do it right. A lot of people, especially here in Tasmania, they'll take an animal on but not really know what they're doing, or not research, or not talk to somebody, and then we take animals on from these people that have damaged them even more than what they were because they just haven't done any research or talked to anybody. So yeah, I just say, just help as much as you can, get the information that the animal needs is the most important thing, because they're in stress, they're in shock when they, you know, are injured, sick, orphaned. Yeah, they need help, and it's just like a, you could put it into the, if it was a human, you know, what would you do? And it's the same for an animal. They need the same help, they need the same care.
Yeah, I guess I've got one little one. So I'd like it if people just found one natural, I'll say, object a day to appreciate. It could be just be a pot plant, for example. Just appreciate it. Something that nature's made, you know. Could be a rock. Could be a cloud in the sky. Just one thing. Just appreciate it. That's good. That'll do for the day.
I think that's great. I think that's a great place to end. And thank you guys so much for being willing to talk about what the wonderful work you do here. And thank you for doing all that you do. That's, you guys do a lot.
That's cool. And thanks to you guys. It's been really cool to meet you. And yeah, all the best for your travels.
Yes.
It's cool. Yeah.
Thank you.
So that interview just was so fun to do with Charlene and Bruce. They're so fantastic, and the work they do is so awesome. And it was just so exciting and fun to hear some of their stories and how they got started and the reasons behind it. It gave Lee and I really renewed faith in humanity.
Yeah, we kind of needed that.
Which we need. We all need a little bit of that.
Yeah, yeah. It was absolutely wonderful. And just that central message of you're capable of doing something positive, and you can have positive influence. There's something that you can do. You can take action, whether it's big or small. And I think that's just a great message to all of us, and especially relating it to animals, when Steve and I are both animal lovers. Steve said that Charlene and Bruce are amplified versions of us, and I think that's a great way to put it, which is why we just really got along with them so well, I think.
They were, and it's not in the interview, but Bruce had, like, he makes his own guitars and has several guitars, and so him and I were just able to talk music and guitars. And Leo was able to talk animals with Charlene. So they were like ourselves in a, like, slightly alternate universe.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So some useful information for any of our listeners that ever come across a injured animal. There are 5 steps. Number 1, make sure the animal is secure, comfortable, and confined, which typically involves wrapping it in a blanket or towel and putting the animal in a comfortable box. Number 2, keeping the animal warm but not hot. Number 3, placing the animal in a quiet, dark space. Number 4, do not give the animal any food, water, or cow's milk. And number 5, keep children and pets away, because stress can be a killer for animals in that critical first few minutes.
Yeah, so if you ever do come across an animal that's injured and you think it can survive and you want to take it to a rehabilitation center, stress is a major factor. You want to decrease the stress as much. You think stress is the killer for us humans, and these little guys, or whatever animal it is, just stress can really affect
them. Yeah, absolutely. So if you're in Tasmania specifically, there's a 24-hour hotline that Steve and I also utilized called the Bonorong Wildlife Sanctuary, and that number is 03-6268-1184. And they will connect you, like they did with us, to different wildlife sanctuaries within the appropriate region.
Yeah, and if you want to see adorable pictures of all the animals that Charlene and Bruce take care of, or find out more information about what they do, it's 100% volunteer. You can donate to them directly or purchase some things off their website.
Yeah, they have some orphaned wildlife photography gifts, or just donate directly to her.
So if you want to find out more information, go. Her website is somethingmagical.com.au, and her Instagram you can find by searching Andara Wildlife Sanctuary, and she has the most adorable pictures of all her animals.
Yeah, so Andara is where you need to go, and you will not be disappointed.
Yes, and so if nothing else, go look at some photos. And yeah, see the wonderful work that they do.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of Instagram, you can find us on Instagram at Insightful Adventures, where we have posted a picture already of our fairy penguin rescue, and we will continue to post amazing pictures of our travels around Australia.
Yes, and that is a great place. We always update our Instagram with the location that we're at. So if you want to know where we're currently at, look at our Instagram. And also, we are on iTunes, and we'd like to reach the up-and-coming, and the best way for us to do that is for people to give reviews. So if you'd like, give us a review on iTunes, and that would help out.
Yeah, but subscribers and downloads also help. So if you don't want to write a review, it helps. It really just helps to listen.
So thanks for listening, and we'll catch you guys next time.
Bye.